All right, welcome to the deep dive. You ask us to dive into the escalating conflict between Israel and Iran, specifically what happened on June 13th. Well, you picked a moment. On that day, the world did watch as Israel launched a massive aerial assault on Iran, sending over 200 fighter jets, missiles, and drones.
Yeah, a huge number.
And what followed wasn't just a response, but a rapid, sort of dizzying exchange of blows, unlike anything we've seen in recent history.
Right, very different pattern.
It's left everyone asking, what on earth just happened, and where does it go from here?
It's definitely a critical moment, and that's precisely our mission for this deep dive. We're going to try and unpack this recent surge in tensions.
Okay.
Our goal is really to cut through the noise, give you the essential facts from our sources, help you grasp the full picture of this critical global situation,
You're right.
and maybe consider the various potential futures that could unfold. Think of it as your express lane to being genuinely well-informed on a truly pivotal global situation.
Okay, let's get right into the heart of it then. The spark for this blaze was indeed that Israeli attack on June 13th. The first explosions were reported around 3:30 a.m. in Tehran, Iran's capital. And this wasn't some small skirmish. Our sources describe it as a large-scale aerial assault by Israel. Warplanes, drones, missiles, the works.
And what's really noteworthy here are the specific targets. The attack wasn't just broad. It seems it was surgically precise in many ways.
How so?
Well, key targets included the Natanz nuclear facility, which is about 200 kilometers south of Tehran. Targeting a nuclear site immediately raises significant concern, obviously.
Obviously.
But beyond that, the assault explicitly targeted high-ranking military leaders, people like Hossein Salami, the head of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRTC,
Right.
and even reports mention the Israeli Defense Force Chief of Staff, Mohammed Bagheri, being targeted.
And it wasn't just those two, was it? I think their sources mentioned others.
That's right. They also apparently hit the commander of the Israeli Army's central headquarters and the IRGC's Aerospace Force commander.
Wow.
But here's where it gets particularly aggressive, you could say. Israel also launched targeted attacks specifically to eliminate key Iranian nuclear scientists involved in their nuclear program.
Okay, hitting scientists directly, not just facilities. Is that a new tactic or just particularly aggressive this time?
It certainly feels like a significant escalation in tactics. I mean, past actions often focus more on infrastructure, sabotage maybe.
Right.
Our sources also reveal something else unusual reported in this attack. The claim that some of the drones were launched from inside Iran.
From inside, how?
Well, it suggests a highly sophisticated infiltration, likely by groups like Mossad, perhaps, who would have needed to identify and monitor these targets on the ground beforehand.
That's pretty bold.
Yeah. Israel apparently termed this Operation Rising Lion, and it's described as one of the largest attacks Iran has faced, certainly recently.
Okay, so given that scale, immediate retaliation was almost inevitable, wasn't it?
You'd think so, yes. And Iran did respond. They launched over 200 missiles and drones at various locations in Israel.
And Israel's Iron Dome, did it cope?
It intercepted most of them, according to reports. But some did manage to get through and hit targets, including areas in Tel Aviv and Israeli military headquarters, apparently caused significant
But then
damage.
it just stopped or kept going.
No, it didn't stop there. And this is the key difference, maybe. Unlike past incidents where there might have been a pause, a few days later, maybe,
Hi.
the exchanges continued almost immediately. Israel launched counter-retaliation attacks, this time targeting Iranian oil fields and other nuclear facilities.
And Iran's response.
Another significant punchback, reportedly. It wasn't a pause. It was an immediate counterstrike again.
So this immediate continuous back and forth, that's the really new worrying pattern here, isn't it? Signals a much higher intensity.
Absolutely. It's a stark departure from past patterns. Which, of course, raises the crucial question, doesn't it? Why now?
Exactly. Why this sudden, intense escalation after years of, simmering tensions and proxy conflicts?
To understand this, I think we need to delve into the deeper roots and maybe start with Israel's core motivation, what they perceive as an existential threat.
Iran getting a nuclear weapon.
Precisely. Israel views Iran becoming a nuclear power as a direct threat to its very existence. This fundamental concern is what primarily drives Israel's targeting of Iranian nuclear facilities, and now it seems the scientists too.
So this existential concern, it's not new. It's rooted in this long, really complex history of Iran's nuclear program. But didn't we have agreements like the NPT meant to manage this?
We did, and that history is important. Iran's nuclear program goes way back, even received initial support from the U.S. during the Shah's time, believe it or not.
Right before the revolution.
Exactly. And Iran signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT. That committed them to peaceful nuclear energy, use electricity, research, medicine, and crucially, not pursuing weapons.
And submitting to check.
Yes. Submitting to scrutiny from the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, sharing data. The NPT was supposed to provide that framework for peaceful use.
But clearly, things went off track somewhere. When did the alarm bells really start ringing internationally?
That happened mainly with enrichment levels. By around 2006, Iran had achieved 3.5% enriched uranium. That's generally considered safe, okay, for power generation.
Okay.
But then, by 2010, IAEA reports indicated some Iranian facilities were reaching 19.5% enrichment.
And that's significant because?
Because 90% enrichment is considered weapons grade. So hitting nearly 20% showed they were making serious progress towards that potential capability. It raised major international alarms.
And the consequence was sanctions.
Yes, severe economic sanctions from the U.S. and other nations followed pretty quickly.
So sanctions, rising enrichment. Was there a big push to pull things back from the brink diplomatically? I guess that brings us to the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, right? That felt like a potential game changer for a while.
It absolutely did. The JCPOA, negotiated in 2015 under President Obama, it involved the P5 plus one, that's the U.S., Russia, U.K., France, China, plus Germany talking with Iran.
And what was the deal, basically?
Iran agreed to seriously limit its enrichment, capping it at 3.67%, suitable only for peaceful use. They also agreed to cap their stockpile of enriched uranium at 300 kilograms.
And in return?
In return, those major Western sanctions were lifted. It looked like a path forward.
But a path that didn't last long.
No, it didn't. In 2018, President Trump unilaterally withdrew the U.S. from the JCPOA. The other countries urged him not to, but the U.S. pulled out.
And the result?
The direct consequence was Iran resumed its enrichment program, pushing those levels higher again.
So where are we now in 2024?
Well, recent reports indicate Iran has now reached 60% enriched uranium.
60%. If 90 is weapons grade, 60 sounds alarmingly close.
It's what some call a critical level. Doesn't mean they have a weapon, but it means they possess the key enrichment technology and could potentially reach that 90% mark much more quickly. It's a threshold.
Which must be incredibly alarming for Israel, going back to their core concern.
Absolutely. It changes the timeline, the potential breakout time.
Okay, so that really puts the nuclear program status into perspective. What about the U.S. role more recently? Trump started new talks, right? Despite pulling out of the old deal.
Yes, it's a bit complex. One of Trump's stated ambitions for a second term was ending wars, bringing global peace. So his administration did initiate new talks with Iran for a nuclear deal.
And set a deadline.
Right. On April 14th, he apparently gave Iran 60 days. So yep. Until June 14th to reach an agreement.
But those talks stalled. What was the sticking point?
The main one seems to be Trump's demand for no uranium enrichment inside Iran at all, only allowing them to acquire it externally.
And Iran's reaction?
Complete rejection. That was a non-starter for Tehran. So five rounds of talks failed. The sixth round is actually scheduled for June 15th in Oman.
The day after the deadline and 2 days after the Israeli attack.
Exactly. Predictably, that sixth round was canceled because of this conflict.
And just before all this kicked off, the IAEA, the nuclear watchdog, made a move too.
Yes, another crucial piece here. On June 12th, just a day before the Israeli attack, the IAEA's Board of Governors, that's 35 member states, passed a resolution.
What did it say?
It stated that Iran has breached its non-proliferation commitments through its uranium enrichment activities and significantly mentioned nuclear weapons development efforts.
Wow. That sounds like strong language from the IAEA.
It is. What's really striking is that our sources say this is the first time the IAEA has taken such a formal critical stance against Iran, specifically on these grounds, in 20 years.
20 years? That's a major diplomatic signal, isn't it? Right before the bombs fell.
It absolutely is. Yeah. It essentially put an international stamp on the concerns about Iran's nuclear trajectory. So you have all this crucial background, Iran's accelerating nuclear progress, the stalled U.S. talks hitting a wall, the IAEA's unprecedented resolution.
Right.
And then, bang, the Israeli attack. The big strategic question remains, why did Israel choose this specific moment to strike with such force?
Okay, so let's get into the theories behind the timing. What are the main possibilities people are discussing?
Well, it seems like there are several divergent theories, and it's possible, you know, that more than one factor is at play. It's rarely simple.
Sure. What's the first one?
Possibility one. Israel acted independently, maybe even against U.S. wishes.
Why would they do that?
The argument here is that Israel, fundamentally, will never allow Iran to reach a nuclear deal with the U.S. or anyone because they see any Iranian nuclear program, even one supposedly limited by a deal, as an unacceptable existential threat.
So they'd rather torpedo the talks?
Potentially. Some analysts even suggest Netanyahu might have ignored a direct instruction from Trump not to attack while those talks were ongoing, right up to that June 14th deadline.
Okay, that's one view. What's another possibility?
Possibility two.
Yeah.
It was actually a U.S.-Israel coordinated strategy. Maybe not publicly admitted, but coordinated.
How would that work? The U.S. wants a deal. Israel attacks. Seems counterintuitive.
The theory suggests the U.S. might have secretly consented to the Israeli attack, or maybe even greenlit it, precisely as a tactic to pressure Iran.
How? By scaring them?
Essentially, yes. To scare Iran into realizing that, look, without a deal, Israel will just keep destroying your nuclear facilities and your program. So maybe better take the deal that's on the table, even if it's tough. Force them to the table faster.
Okay. Plausible, I suppose. What's theory number three?
This one focuses on Netanyahu's domestic political situation in Israel. The domestic detraction theory.
Right. The idea that leaders sometimes start external conflicts to rally support at home.
Exactly. The argument is Netanyahu might have initiated this large-scale attack partly to divert public attention from some significant domestic problems and criticisms he's facing.
Such as?
Things like the inability still to fully free all the prisoners taken from Gaza during the October 7th attacks last year. The perception by some that Hamas hasn't been completely defeated despite the long war, and the ongoing difficult struggle against Hezbollah in the north.
So attacking Iran.
Attacking Iran's nuclear facilities lets him portray strong, decisive action against Israel's biggest perceived enemy. A way to change the narrative, perhaps.
Okay, what else?
Possibility four relates to the American military posture in the region.
How so?
Well, there's been a significant buildup of U.S. military presence in the Middle East recently. More warships, more warplanes, reinforced bases.
Right.
Some argue this increased U.S. footprint might have served as an implicit or even explicit assurance to Israel of American backup. Knowing the U.S. military is right there in force might have emboldened Israel to launch such a major attack, feeling more secure about handling any potential fallout.
Makes sense. A feeling of having cover. Is there a fifth theory?
Yes. The fifth one suggests the timing was opportune because Iran's proxy forces have been weakened lately.
You mean groups like Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis in Yemen?
Exactly. While they certainly haven't been eradicated, their capabilities have arguably been significantly diminished through the recent conflicts, especially in Gaza and Lebanon, and also with the international response to Houthi attacks.
So Israel saw a window of opportunity.
Perhaps. With Iran's main regional proxies somewhat degraded, Israel might have calculated this was a relatively good moment to strike Iran directly, believing those proxies were less capable of launching a devastating, coordinated retaliatory strike on Iran's behalf.
Okay, so those are five distinct possibilities acting alone, coordinating with the U.S., domestic politics, U.S. presence, weakened proxies. As you said, maybe it's a mix.
It often is. These theories highlight just how complex the web of motivations can be in this region. Now, looking ahead, the really big question is, what's next? Where does this go?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. What are the potential paths forward from here?
Well, based on these sources and the current dynamics, there seem to be several possibilities, each with pretty significant implications.
Okay, lay them out for us. Possibility one.
Simply continued, intensified conflict. We've already talked about how the pattern shifted that immediate back and forth.
Right, no more waiting days for retaliation.
Exactly. That signals a higher intensity, and there's no guarantee it stops now. It could easily just continue simmering or flaring up like this for some time. Plus, the change in tactics is important.
Targeting the leaders and scientists openly.
Yes. Israel openly targeting military leaders and nuclear scientists who are technically civilians as part of an overt military operation, Rising Lion, not some deniable covert attack. That openness could well provoke similar open, direct retaliation from Iran, targeting specific individuals or sites.
That sounds like a dangerous path. What's a worse possibility?
Well, the most concerning, obviously, is an all-out war.
A direct, full-scale war between Israel and Iran.
Yes. Some sources suggest Israel might feel it has an advantage right now, having potentially eliminated key Iranian military leaders and weakened those proxy forces. But if Iran feels cornered,
they might double down on the nuclear program.
Exactly. They might decide to make a dash for a weapon, using their remaining facilities, and that 60% enriched uranium, calculating it's their only deterrent. That could lead to preemptive strikes and a truly devastating regional war.
And could it draw others in?
That's the other huge risk. If Iran were to get significant support from, say, Russia or China, then the U.S. and other allies would almost certainly back Israel. You could see a much wider, potentially even global, conflict escalating from this.
Okay, that's the nightmare scenario. Are there less kinetic options, maybe indirect actions?
That's another possibility, yes.
Yeah.
Iran might choose to avoid direct military confrontation, but opt for indirect actions, particularly economic warfare.
Like what? The Strait of Hormuz.
Precisely. The Strait of Hormuz is unbelievably critical. It's the choke point connecting the Persian Gulf to the Indian Ocean. About a third of all global seaborne oil trade passes through there.
How much oil are we talking?
Somewhere between 17 and 20 million barrels of crude oil every day.
Wow.
So if Iran were to impose a blockade or even just create significant disruptions and uncertainty there, the impact would be massive.
Global trade, the world economy, oil prices, it would hit everything, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. The global economic shockwaves would be immediate and severe. It's a powerful lever for Iran, short of all-out war.
Okay, so continued conflict, all-out war, economic warfare. Is there any chance of things just calming down, de-escalation?
That's the final possibility, possibility four. De-escalation and a return to something resembling the previous status quo.
Is there precedent for that?
Yes. Historically, many Israel-Iran flare-ups, even direct ones, have often involved maybe one or two rounds of attacks and retaliations, and then things eventually subside without escalating into a major sustained war. Both sides pull back from the brink.
So there's hope?
There's always hope that this current, very intense episode might also follow that pattern and end without spiraling completely out of control. It's a pattern we've seen before. But as we've discussed, the speed, the scale, the openness of these recent exchanges does feel different this time. So relying on past patterns might be optimistic.
Okay. So we've unpacked the immediate, pretty unprecedented escalation, looked at the history, the nuclear program, the JCPOA roller coaster, explored those different theories for why now, and considered these, well, quite varied possibilities for what comes next, from de-escalation to all-out war.
It really covers a lot of ground. And maybe this brings us to a final thought, something for you, the listener, to consider. Given this unprecedented speed and the openness of these recent exchanges we've been talking about, what do you think is the biggest shift, the most significant change in this long-standing dynamic between Israel and Iran? And maybe more importantly, how might that shift impact global stability in the coming months?
That's a heavy question to end on. It really shows just how deeply history shapes today's headlines, doesn't it? And how fragile global stability can sometimes feel. We definitely invite you to keep thinking about it and continue your own exploration of these really vital topics. Thanks for diving deep with us today.